And Dutch Armin Simran Huckabee. A whole lot tougher. Because, why? Not enough meditation before. Not enough one-pointedness. That's why you need Hong Sa and all those other techniques to develop one-pointedness. See, the self-realization comes before God-realization. God-realization is the final cap. Just a tapering off of the whole thing. But you have to work at self-realization on yourself to develop concentration, develop interiorization in order to bring your mind at one point of it, that you can listen to these higher selves. The thing is, through the repetition of the holy names, you do slow off the pull of the five senses. So you eventually develop one point in this app. There's one advantage that the master has granted his blessing. And that means you've got five incarnations of karma taken off already. This is the credit they give you. You see? That you don't have to work out five incarnations of karma after they extend you this credit. Now if you're broke and you need credit, somebody's gonna vouch for you, right? And you have to work to pay it off. And the spiritual master grants you this spiritual credit for five incarnations. And this is the advantage of being prepared before initiation. Because then you take, it comes in stride, the momentum builds up. So you have a last entry, in fact, you, by the exposure before and then taking initiation, you've gained something. That's why I say no one is in a rush to take initiation right away, because no one really knows what they're getting into in initiation. The preparation is important. It's like you can't write a book unless you know the alphabet and how to construct languages, sentences and so forth. Then you sit down and write something. It's the same way with cosmic consciousness. You can't go fully into it unless you have made the necessary preparations in consciousness. But the little exposure you've had prior to initiation has given you a boost. Now, with the help of the master, since he's assumed that responsibility to see you through to the end, see, this is an unbroken law. That's why he's called the Godfather. You know, we have godparents when we are baptized in churches, but they don't mean anything to us. The real Godfather isn't, or is the person who assumes to see that you return back to God in this incarnation or in all the incarnations. But preparation is necessary. Oh, you can't hear your darshan now. Right? Not me. He's grinding it to you. See, all the masters are in the one consciousness. All the disciples are linked to it. It's only the disciple who thinks they are distinct and separate gets carried away. But the disciple who realizes that all their masters are one with God, he becomes a channel for any master to grant a darshan to his disciple, no matter who he is. Same with Charan Singh's disciples too. Grant them darshan. So the thing is this, all you're learning right now is preparation for initiation. The initiation is a very, very sacred bond. In fact, very little of it has been known in the West about it. It has been called baptism by the Christian faith when John the Baptist was baptizing, you know. It means by water. Now, initiation goes beyond baptism. John the Baptist baptized people with water when he was alive. But he never baptized with the Spirit. That is, he never did initiate by the Spirit in the body of John the Baptist. Prior to the body of John the Baptist in the previous incarnation, he did initiate in the Spirit as a guru that lived before. He was Elijah in a previous incarnation, and his disciple was Elias. And his disciple was not fully realized. And his disciple said to him, "Would you grant me a double portion of your spirit?" In other words, would you take me up to Satlok or Satkan, right to the final end of cosmic consciousness, where there is the unmanifest God is? And Elijah said, "You ask a hard thing, because I work for mine, you ain't working for yours. You begging for something you want it too easy. But you can pull a master through his nose by love. Every devotee of God is a victim of love. He cannot refuse it. There's too much love. The moment you generate some love for him, he gives you the universe of God right away. You want to get the thing." So he said, "All right, if you see me before I pass on, it's yours. This is the love. This is the compassion. The mantle, you know, this, not the piece of cloth on his head. This cosmic consciousness is yours now. This experience is yours." And he did see him before he passed out of the body, and he granted it him. Now, but that is what we call, he became an ascended master. He was not a manifested master. He was not commissioned by God to come into the body to teach truth. Whereas Elijah was commissioned by God to teach truth to Elias. But Elias achieved this now through the grace of his teacher. So he has to come back now as a manifested master. So he came back in the body of Jesus. And when he was in the body of Jesus, he said, "Elijah has come," and they know him not. The roles were reversed now. John the Baptist was Elijah. The guru came back a second time to fulfill the role. Not to initiate now as before, but to just wait for the moment when his disciple. You see, the guru and disciple relationship is never broken in life and death, and life and death is never broken. It'll follow you like a motherbird all through your life. So it had to come back, it had to be born again, now just to fulfill this role. So John the Baptist came before Jesus, crying in the wilderness of five senses, the wilderness of sense limitation. And when Jesus came to him, interesting, huh? Why did he not go to some other prophet living at the time? And why would he proclaim that Elijah had come and the people knew him not? They were looking for Elijah to come back. But here was Elijah, but they couldn't recognize him because their five senses were limited. They did not have the perception or the intuition to perceive a God-man standing in their midst. Now, he had the perception. He went to John, then starts the big argument. "You baptized me." "Oh no, you baptized me." "Oh no, you baptized me." "No, you baptized me." This is the big argument between the two. Well, imagine two grown guys talking about baptism. one saying, you do it, why? And the other is saying, I baptize you with water, but there cometh one after me who will baptize you with the Spirit, whose shoes I'm not even worthy to tie. Where does the worthiness and the unworthiness comes in? Only because the roles are reversed now. His guru had to see him go to the highest state of development. He had to bring him up there by bestowing the grace in previous incarnation. He has to be there to see him ushered in now by divine law, God commanding this disciple now to go back into the world among the Jewish people as a manifested master, born and whose birth is predicted before birth. That's what a manifested master's life is. He's never born unknown. He's always born known by others of the same caliber of consciousness. He's always predicted before he's born. And the roles of the guru must be there to usher him back, must give him the key back. You see, because it's a human mechanism. God is in man, Emmanuel. God is with us all the time in the human body. He's not somewhere remote in a throne. He is your conscious life here with you now. So, John baptized with water, admitting for the time that he was no longer a guru, no longer a manifested master. He was here to set the new manifested master in motion, to turn over the roles of a guruship for the new age of that period. Jesus came to him. Now, all the time he baptized many people, but did not initiate them. When Jesus came and the tussle between who should do this initiation now, since both men are equal now, you see, and Jesus says, no, you baptize me because this is the way of righteousness. That statement is very important. The disciple must always respect the guru's position regardless if the roles are reversed in any incarnation. It's the guru who brought him there, because the guru is God already. And this is the way of true thinking, right law. You see? So the disciple had to admit the honor due to the spiritual master who was fully illumined at one time and only assumed this unassuming role as a herald or a sort of a broadcast of truth now. He's taken on a different role now. He doesn't come back as a guru to initiate now. So the disciple is recognizing this role, this change in role. So, but he's still saying, no, you baptize, because this is the way of righteousness. This is the respect. This is always the respect. As in Mahiri, Mayasha, and Triyat, and Babaji. It is still Babaji who initiated Lahiri. Although Lahiri was a manifested master now in this incarnation. But this role is accepted, you see. Now, when he accepted the responsibility of initiating his disciple, not baptizing him now, as soon as he touched him on the forehead, there was the sound, like the rushing of waters, the audible life stream. He heard it clear right in the right ear. And he heard the various higher sounds within the audible life stream. And then he saw the dove, which is the five-pointed star, inverted, descending now. That light coming down within himself. Now, he's seeing it. The person who wrote it was not present. So somebody had to tell the author of that particular literature what occurred. See, most people never realize when they read that, they said, "Lo, the voice of God from heaven came out and said, like a dove descending on his shoulder, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." Well, who wrote that? Certainly not Jesus. Well, let's see if that person was present. Where was that person? If he was present, then he was a student of John the Baptist. And if he was a student of John the Baptist, he was preparing his consciousness for such an experience. And if it happened in this one disciple that had been initiated by his guru now, then his spiritual eye opened for a brief moment to see it, and his inner ear opened to hear it. You see? So that way he had what is called a jump in consciousness. His consciousness expanded for that moment from the overflow of the initiation. This does happen when someone initiates and there are a few people in the room. That person who has been initiated, what inner experiences they are experiencing can be perceived and be picked up as an overflow. Now, he was initiated and he saw this inner light descending in him, and he heard this sound and the voice saying, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." Well, it didn't mean, "This is Jesus Christ, my only Son in whom I am well pleased." Because the moment you're initiated, realizing that the Guru is God in flesh, who is granting you liberation, who is assuming your karma for 5 incarnations, he's recognizing the Sun, S-U-N, the cosmic light in you, which he's well pleased to assume the responsibility now. So you have automatically had your second birth. Unless you be born again, thou canst not enter into the kingdom of heaven. But Nicodemus thought he had to go back in his mother's womb to do it. This is birth of consciousness, not birth of flesh. When the consciousness is open, there is light. It's an S-U-N, not an S-O-N. It is this light, this Sun, that you are well pleased to perceive all the time. It thrills you all the time when you look into it. This Sun is what the Guru wants you to see all the time. It is this Sun he so immersed in that he wants to give you it. He wants you to become it. You see? But like the Father, which is cosmic light already, and the central Sun, and if a ray of Sun is going to project itself in an individual thing, you might as well call it an S-O-N too. It's an offspring of the big one. So aren't we all sons of light? When we are initiated, this is a reality to us. This is what Jesus said and said, "When thine eyes are single," but there was a word left out, because the translator did not know why that word had to be there. Focused. The body is full of light. So he wrote, "When thine eye is single," when thine eyes are single, the body is full of light. Now this is kind of misleading because it doesn't show you a way to understand it, what has been written. But if you say, "And thine eyes are single focused," your whole body is full of light, then this tells you something scientific. At the same time, it tells you something cosmic and spiritual. But it has nothing to do with Church Yakti. So, Jesus, after he was initiated, and he had the inner experience, what did he do?
Went into the wilderness.
Went to fight with his own ego, right? What are you doing? You're going through your limp. You're going through your monkey now, right? Sure. This is the process. But he came prepared. 18 long years, you know, from 12 to 30, to 30, he trained himself in all the techniques of concentration and meditation. He did lots of simran, lots of bhajan, and lots of kirtan to bring him to that level. That makes it possible to hold on now. Also, he brought bhakti, lots of love. Now, don't do none of those techniques that you're being given without love. You want to get fast into God? Do it with love. Always do a thing with love. Repeat the mantra with love. And you will find that you will get results quicker. Answered all your questions? Well, not me, you know. It's your guru telling you. He's sending you the message, right? You're just repeating the five names without any connection to the thing, right? See, you cannot do it without love, because it's like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. If there's no love in that, it's a dead tone. No, chant it with love.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Mentally repeat without moving a tongue, Radha Swami. Radha Swami means Lord of the Soul. Jesus said, I and my Father are one. We can say the same thing too. These mantras develop the consciousness to be focused on God. Literal wine of the bottle. One of his greatest verses were, I sent my soul out into the invisible, right here. He had the ability to leave the body at will. A letter of the afterlife, the spell, what goes on in the realms. By and by, my soul came back and said, I myself am heaven and hell. So, Radha Swami, or the science of the soul, begins from the big toe and ends at the top of the skull. The whole study of God starts from here, all the way up, right up to here. But you don't look here to discover God. You look here, all the time, at the third eye. See, here is where the soul and the mind is connected all the time. Now, you don't look down. You are not interested in the centers below the eye. You're only interested in the center above the eye. See? The centers below deal with the ganglia, parasympathetic nervous system. And they are, if you're interested in the lesser forms of yoga, physical health and so forth, it's all right. But that does not get God realization. God realization begins from here. That's why Jesus said, when thine eyes are single, focused, turned in, the whole body is full of light. This is crystallized light. E equals mc squared. Energy equals the mass times the velocity of light squared. This is an atomic result. God has become us. From the unmanifest state, he has slowed down to become manifestation. There is no other technique that he could have used. Very simple, but very effective. God has become us. We are not God. He has become us already. But we are the result of his projected energy. His untapped reservoir is the unmanifested state. We cannot begin to comprehend the untapped reservoir of God yet. This goes beyond Satchitananda. This goes beyond Satloka. You follow me? That's why they call it the Anami, the unmanifested. The scientifically speaking, it is the non-vibratory state of consciousness. Because in that state there is no vibration. In that state there is no vibration. That is the vibrationless state of consciousness. That is where we say God or cosmic consciousness is that pure consciousness that exists in vibration as creation and exists beyond vibration as non-vibratory creation. In the Genesis it is said God rested on the seventh day, but if in a literal sense he was to rest on the seventh day, this whole universe will collapse. What it really means is out of the total reservoir of pure consciousness and manifest, a portion went out and became manifest within six cycles of creation, and the balance remained as it was potentially waiting as the unmanifest. Now the borderline between manifestation and non-manifestation is where all the masters are. That is Satlok, the eternal existence, the eternal consciousness, the eternal anandam or bliss. Sat, Chit, Anandam, the point between existence and non-existence. This is the level where the masters take you, and from there on God takes you in. You become the ocean. I am the bubble, make me the sea. The master cannot make you the sea. God makes you the sea of consciousness. God makes you unmanifest, but you don't lose your individuality. You gain your individuality in the unmanifested state of love. You know for sure now that it is right to say in that state, I and my Father are one. In that state, you can say, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, with full love. With hail to the indwelling Lord. But you need to know that we are all living in vibration. We're all living in a manifested state. And because we live in a manifested state, it is very difficult to comprehend the unmanifest. Now here is where the trickery comes in. We are endowed with a mind that plays lots of tricks in the manifested state with us. It makes us want to stay in the manifested state. It makes us want to live in the manifested state and become enslaved in the manifested state. It does not want us to leave this manifested state and go back home. Now the saints have all said, this is not your home. Think of it in a bigger dimension. Earth is not my home. Then where did I come from? Is it possible in some distant past I came from other terrestrial realms, highly endowed with pure consciousness, and got stranded here or marooned here in my journey towards other planets? Think of it. Well, why not? God made man in his own image and likeness, male and female created them. The whole universe is populated with male and female. Didn't say he made Adam and Eve as the only thing, you know. And that was a going thing at that time. Now, the creation that we see around us now as science penetrates more into the structure leads us to wonder and think, can the sages Can the great saints of the past, even though they are in the body today, be actually telling us the truth? Is it possible that within this brain there are levels that are not tapped? Yes. There are levels that are not tapped. And the levels that are not tapped leaves us two choices. To exert your ego to discover it and pay the price, or let the divine will unfold it for you without any price. Now this is difficult, to let the divine will unfold it for you without any price. It's more easy for us to get up and do it ourselves, you know, and exert our ego and pay a price, or we may not know what the price may be demanded of us. This is because we have an outward manifestation and an inward manifestation going on at the same time. The outward manifestation is research, experimentation, trial and error, testing, evaluating, condemning, reassessing, repostulating. But this is geared to a cosmic law called the Wheel of Life, long known by the sages as the Yugas. No end, no beginning. Ascending and descending eternally all the time. So there is no end to evolution, there is no end to creation, it's always rising and falling all the time. It's one big rat race. That's what the Yugas are. They are called the four ages. There's a golden age when man is God, walking on the earth with total God awareness. Earth means living on the realms of manifestation. Every thought is materialized at will in the golden age. Yet within the golden age, there are blocks of mankind, not beyond the stone age in mentality. You see how imbalanced that can be even in the golden age? We have that today in atomic age. There are blocks of mankind, not even beyond the stone age too. Now, the next age is called the Silver Age, when man is demigod or half god. He's not a full god realized individual. So we have the gods and the demigods. The demigods, they also now and then can manifest their thoughts at will, but they are limited. There are certain powers that they cannot do, which is not natural to them. They will then come the next age, which you call the Bronze Age, where you have the heroes who intermarry with the demigods, and who intermarry with the immortals. So the hero period we have. Then finally we have the last age, which is called the priest. Iron Age. Religion goes right down to the priest. It doesn't go any below that. There are what you call the churchianity or the priestcraft, custodians of truth without experience. The hero is trying to live truth, but must link himself to an immortal heritage, which is a demigod. And a demigod lives, but not fully released. And finally, there is the God-man, total God-man. These yugas, or these ages, go on grinding. This is the outward life. Now let's see in terms of our mechanical science. In the priest age, there is no mechanical science. Everything is wooden or stone, and very little metal. And if there is metal, it's all limited. So the concepts are very concrete, crystallized. No understanding of the properties of matter. This will happen in the Iron Age. No one's life is worth anything. There is no sense of value. There is no sense of discipline. There is no sense of character. There is no sense of ideal. There is no realization of God. But yet, within that era, within those periods, there are God-illumined men who must come in the world to bring just a few out of that morass, like a lotus out of the mud above the water, to see the light. Just a few come up. So we have our prophets. And there we say, lo, there was a king who sent out his messengers among the men of the earth, and they turned around and slayed them and sent them back. They were invited to a feast, the feast of the divinity, in your concrete age or your iron age. Now let's go to the next age, which we are approaching into now. We have left the iron age not too long. We are in the cusp of the iron age, or what you call Kali Yuga, the dark age in which man and his inhumanity to man, the whole Middle Ages is an example of it. This is happening on the outside. Now let's see when the first discovery of something unusual about material substances, the discovery of magnetism, discovery of electricity by rubbing certain things, but these are all very minor discoveries. And then, I found something new. You know, the monkey fell back. This is a slow process. But nothing really going on a gigantic scale. We come out of that into the cusp. And we see we are in the cusp. We have discovered the atom, the basic foundation of creation, the substance of which we are constructed of. So we are entering now Bronze Age or Dwapara. Yet in this age too, we must have illumined masters to lead us out. Now this illumined master process is an inner working of the opposite, what is going on in the outside. They are not concerned with what goes on in the outside. The masters are concerned with what goes on in the inside with those few caught in those ages, or who are going to extricate themselves out of those ages. Going back to God is like a turnstile. The whole mass creation cannot run through that turnstile. They all got to go through one at a time. And this is, each one has to go through his own deliverance in some age. Getting to be awakened in the West. Therefore he sent truth to the West, so that they may be awakened. Now, if he has perceived this, then rest assured that when your consciousness became exposed to this type of thinking, you were one that was already stamped. You know, not a wandering maverick, you were branded waiting to go back to Bar X. See? In other words, the shepherd has come for the sheep. You have to go back. You cannot stray away. So you're already perceived. So this is the promise. This is the advantage of being perceived on a higher plane, to be attracted to this concept. Now, a sheep has strayed from its flock. It's going to run into brambles and all kind of burrs, and the whole world is going to get lots of things hooked on, mud and everything. But that doesn't deter the shepherd. He knows deep down that's a sheep, and that wool is just as valuable. He's going to clean him up. It's already been branded. Got to take it home. So the souls that are awakening in the West to this higher consciousness are ones who have got many karma, but don't let the karma deter you, because there is no saint without any karma. before Sata had karma to get rid of to become the saint. And Master Jesus says, a saint is a sinner who just lost all his karma. So you see, it's good. Now, we don't know too much of the next age because we can only judge back from history. But we are entering Dwapara or the Bronze Age, in which man is slowly developing his inner abilities to communicate by thought and learning a little of communication through inner sight. And we start to see a host of literature about extrasensory perception. This is nothing new. It has been done in the previous centuries, all through the ages, and you will find it in every group of mankind, there is this phenomenon. At certain times it is strong, and certain times they are weak. We tend to see this phenomena, not this realization, or these cities, these forces, dependent upon the cycles or the yogas, dependent upon astrological constellations. Not necessarily a development, an outcome of a development. Only in a master, only in a spiritually realized individual, this is an outcome of growth. That's why Jesus says, what would it benefit the man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? But if you seek the kingdom of God which is within you and its righteousness, all these things will be added unto you. I'm referring to the extrasensory perceptive qualities now. If you went out hell-bent and exclusively deny yourself in society just to develop extrasensory properties or qualities, in a short while you'll get them, in a short while you'll lose them all. Why? Because you'll develop such an inflated ego that you would not even have any moment of peace or joy. You'll be one to impress and use it. Now, when you realize God as the higher consciousness which brings you peace and joy, these things are added unto you. How? As a result of thought, as you think that what will happen. Only a man of God realization sees this happening every day as he thinks it materializes for him. Vast difference. How many, if you look at all the miracles of Jesus, it was all the result of thinking. Stop wind, don't sink my friends in the boat. The command is given, the action is complete. Comfort Lazarus, don't lie down in the grave no more. Get up and take your bed and walk. Thought in action as a result of spiritual growth in God, not as a result of seeking powers. These are not extrasensory qualities. Vast difference. Now, this inner growth is what the masters are working on when they come to take you back to God. They are not concerned with the outward functioning of the yogas that brings about the extrasensory forces. The extrasensory forces are dependent on this rise and fall. Finally, we come into the golden age. Well, we are in a yoga coming up now, it is Dwapara. But then you go on to Treta Yoga, where every man speaks and communicates telepathically. Clairvoyantly. This is natural by the yoga itself. This is not a result of growth. This is a result of the yoga. This is a result of the astrological movement. The Earth and all its planets in close proximity to Alpha Centauri. Now, that is the cycle. Man is having this brain activity going on. We're seeing manifestations of mutations of different qualities in the human mechanism, different changes in the mechanism, as we get more aware of the atomic powers and its radiation. Now, so certain extrasensory forces are awakened. become active. But that is not the result of spiritual growth. Now, in Satyuga, but in that same period of Treta, mechanical science has mastered all the laws of magnetism. We know very little of the laws of magnetism today. But in that cycle, man will know all the laws of magnetism. You will understand how to manipulate magnetism by thought. Now, you'd understand how to spin metal to make various objects by his thinking. He will mold metal now by thinking. He will mold objects by thinking. He will learn how to direct the magnetic charge of the brain to mold his environment. But that doesn't say he has the ability to materialize thought at will. You follow me? Now here is two objects in a tube. They have certain magnetic impulses. By the power of thought, he will try to join them together and they'll fuse. That doesn't say he will cause two pieces of object to come together by their own atomic structure, form themselves, and fuse. He will learn these laws as nature provides him to do it. Then he will get into Satyuga, or Golden Age, where he will be fully conscious of the spirit now, God in man. In that age, the yoga, the forces, will give him an ability now to perceive his atomic structure and be able to manifest thought. At will. For the first time he'll be doing this possibility of manifesting thought at will. You want something, you generate the thought force and it materializes. This is the ability to materialize your thoughts at will now, in that yoga. Now in that yoga, the only communication between men is truth. Because each one is a living example of an atomic principle. Now the saints are telling us that this is the rightful level of our consciousness, and our real home is at that point where consciousness and manifestation or creation meet. It's called Satlok, the sphere of eternal existence, eternal consciousness, but not eternal pain. Bliss. See? Because no one wants pain. Pain seems to be an unnatural thing to the human body. Yet pain has something to teach you. Pain teaches you patience. It teaches you courage. It teaches you humility. And pain gives you a certain degree of discipline and strength. But that's a hard lesson. Yet true love, you can develop these same forces. But that is not so easily learned, because we take it for granted. But since we don't take these things for granted too much, we have to have a little pain now and then. That's why karma, or the law of cause and effect, or what you sow as you reap, comes to prod you. Natural as it is, nobody invented it, it's here. We just have to learn to live with it. Now Jesus said, if you sow tomatoes, you got to get oranges, right? What do you say? Not right? How come? That should be, after all. That's a pretty good way to do things. So you sow tomatoes, you get tomatoes. As you sow that, you reap. As you think. Now remember, there's a statement, as you think in your heart, that is what you are. This is Satlok. This is Satyuga. This is God realization. At that level, thought manifests all the time. It's only at that level they call you God-man. Now, the God-man or the master, this consciousness is there all the time. Stranger, but very important, because in each yuga or each cycle, there are these God-men who will not leave this earth. They will always be here to take you back to that state. One man would ask, how come in certain religions he says, I am the only teacher and I am the only son of God, so pray to me and therefore all your sins will be washed out. Well, ask yourself a simple thing. If you have a toothache, would you take a dentist who died in 1863 to take it out? You got a bad tooth? You won't go to such a dentist. You want one who lives in 1969 to take that bad tooth out. Now this is true about realization inside of yourself. You want to know how this light works inside, how this consciousness really gets up in there that they're talking about. You want to see, you want a living person here in this realm to make this adjustment for you, to show you a technique of how to do it. He's got to be with you. So masters are always here. Masters are not people who pull you by the nose. Masters are people who are masters of themselves. They have mastered life. But the engineering dynamics of life, they have mastered. They know this delicate balance of depth in life. They have mastered the science of behavior, which is the science of the soul. The science of the soul is the only religion of the universe. It's not Christianity, it's not Buddhism, it's not Confucianism, it's not Hinduism, it's not Islam, it's no ism. It is the doctrine of the Creator that the sons of the Creator propound and talk about. It is no new doctrine. It is the very function of creation itself. It is the result we are looking at. We are the result of the science of the soul. God is the Lord of the soul. The Lord of the soul must teach you the science of the soul. He cannot teach you no ism. And every manifestation, every sun that comes down, every individual who has this contact with it, that comes into the world to talk about it, he is telling you of that same one truth. That's why Jesus, when they ask him, what did he teach? He says, my doctrine is the doctrine of him that sent me. He didn't say I come to teach Christianity. My teaching is the science of the soul. It has no name because it's the science of the how this thing is, how you construct it. When you look in, you have a physical body. 1,000 years ago, you could not accept this body as atomic energy. You could not accept this body as an electrical principle. We have just a few limited gadgets today that can penetrate this tissue to see inside. They're called rays, X-rays and so forth. Now imagine if the spiritual eye is open, where you see right into the very structure of the atom, right back to pure consciousness. What are you seeing? You're going to see every level of creation for the first time. Not colors or swirling lights alone. You're seeing each atomic function as it really is mathematically set up. You're seeing where all the chakras are set up. In the lower body, you're seeing the electrical anatomy of the body. Then you begin to see the ideational anatomy of the body. Then you see something else for the first time. That you are this whole universe. For the first time you can trigger it. Without the loss of your will. Not depending on external agents to do it. Strictly the fact that you have been awakened to a higher consciousness And this consciousness can look down now and take you out and bring you back in. This is an inner experience that comes to the disciple. Now, this very word discipline comes in. A disciple learns to discipline his five senses in meditation, because meditation is an individualistic process. It's not a dualistic process. I can't do it for you, you can't do it for me. You have to do it for yourself. And the old story says you can take the horse to water, but you can't make him drink, right? Now, calming the mind and looking in may seem boring in the start, but it's not boring, because there are certain results that come as you get into it. First, you don't dictate what has to be opened up in here, because the master has a chance that knocks out all type of dictation to God. And this chant is, who is in this temple? Who is in this temple? All the doors do open by themselves. That means all the centers open by themselves. And all the lights, that is the vortices of energies, go on by themselves. Now where is your ego will going to come in to dictate it now? And darkness, like a dark bird, flies away. You see for the first time this whole body is atomic light. Not only feet with the eyes open, but you can see it all around the room, and everywhere it's going to be flashing in front of you. Anywhere you look, you see it. You've not only seen the person, you're seeing all the levels of the person right into the whole. You see all the incarnations. For the first time, you're seeing it really. And you want to ask yourself, where am I? But this is what is happening. For the first time, it's happening. Because it's been opened, it's revealed by divine will. You see? It's been done for you. God loves you so much, he wants to give you the whole creation, but you know what? We don't want it. I'll tell you a little story why we don't want it. Here is your grandfather here. He's got a beautiful house up on the hill. And you're about, say, 9 years of age. And your mommy or daddy says, son, grandpa has got something for you. Go run up to the house and get it. Oh, who wants to go and see? He's old grouch. Last time I saw him, he was yapping at everybody, shaking his stick, and saw his painting, that long beard, right there. Who wants to go there? You go up there, son. Go up there, he's got something for you. Okay. So you walk in, and you come along grandpa's house, and all around is a beautiful garden. Boy, this garden is so beautiful. All the petals are made of gold. All the seeds are diamonds and rubies. Who wants to go and see grandfather? Here, I better go help myself in my pocket. And along comes the gardener. Hello, sonny boy. What you doing? Oh, I'm helping myself. Oh, my grandfather lives up there. Oh, you mean that old grouch? Who wants? Come on and show you the garden, boy. You don't help yourself to anything you want here. And before you know, you helped yourself to the garden. You never got up to the house. And you and the gardener became a good friend, and that is as far as you got. Now let's say, and I'll take you up another way. Grandson? Son, there's your grandfather up in that house there, and that's his garden. There's a message, there's something there for you. You go and get it. Okay. So you're running up. My grandfather's got something for me? I'm going to get it. 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 I got to get it. I got to get it. I got to get it. And you run and run and run and run. You get the door and you bang. You pass the guard. You don't even see the guard. You almost knock him over with your until you hit that door. Grandpa, grandpa, you got something for me? I want it. And the door opens. Okay, grandson, here you are. What do you want? Well, you told my mother you have something for me. Where is it? Okay, come on in. Here's the key to the house. My last will and testament. This house belongs to you. All that's in the garden is yours. And you see this chest here is full of gold and things. And you open it up and everything, you see all this beautiful, everything is gold, silver. It's all yours, grandson. Then you hear the guard note saying, well, I thought I'd get my share, but here he gives it to you at his grandson. Now, this is what we're trying to find out. Where are we going? Are we going to be like the first grandson or the second grandson? What is our attitude to realization? See? You go in and you bang. Knock and it shall be open. It's a door. That's why, you see, Jesus is a smart man. He says, knock. You don't knock at the window to get inside the house. If this is the temple of God, as he calls it, temple of God, this has got to be a house. It's a place where worship is done. So he says a temple. And this is a 10-door temple. Interesting. There are 10 doors to this temple. Well, you can't see the temple. You only can see 9. 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. The temple is right here. You gotta go inside to open that one. That's the same thing as the 10 virgins, mean the same thing. 10 foolish virgins and 10 wise virgins. There's 10 forces that come in and go out to the human body all the time. So when you turn in, you got to knock at that door. Be like that second grandson, I want what I've gotta get. And the doors open by themselves. Now, didn't grandfather open the door from the inside? Huh? You couldn't open the door. It opened from the other side. It's from the other side of life. Within this mechanism, that consciousness is revealed. This is the difference in superconsciousness and subconscious experiences. In subconscious experiences, Leary, with the drug, got the whole geography of the subconscious mind, but never got the superconscious mind. Because the superconscious mind is not functioning in this part of the mechanism. It's functioning above this mechanism. Above each one of us, this consciousness is exactly 2.5 inches over the head. It doesn't get inside. It doesn't come inside until you look in and turn this energy on. Then, by the grace of the Master, you are locked onto it. It's like shooting a satellite into space and sending out another one to go on rendezvous. This is a rendezvousing process. I can't tell you what it is, but you can tell what you felt. Right? You felt, but you don't know what you felt. You felt like a cold chill. Like a current. This current is always around you. It is a force that is there that you lock onto. Now the masters all say that you cannot. No drug is going to hook you to that. This is something that they themselves, it takes life to hook life to life. It takes another human being with whose life that is hooked onto it to make this transference. It takes a battery that is active to charge up one that is stalled, to give it a boost of charge. That's what a master comes in for. That's what initiation is. It's a boost of charge to your soul force, your magnetic mechanism, to allow you now to get into that state. Now this is nothing against Leary and his research. Leary didn't realize where his research was ending. So the process repeated itself over and over for him. He didn't get any further outside the realm of his ideas. You cannot go out beyond your subconscious mind. If you don't have anything, if you have a deep freeze here, you only got the sum total of what you put inside of it. You don't have no more what you don't put inside. So your subconscious mind only can carry the sum total of what has been stored up in the process of evolution. But the superconscious mind has nothing to do with that. The superconscious mind is the totality of life. And this is soul. This has something to do. This is different. This is what Aurobindo referred to. It is ever hovering, waiting to descend in man. That is why it is called the descent of the spirit in man, incarnating, coming into the flesh, coming down into the mechanism. Now, people who have had an experience of the Holy Spirit will tell you, they feel this thing like it coming into them. And one of the first experiences of that is some people, they're able to talk in all types of languages, speaking in tongues. Now, in the time of Jesus, his disciples, on the day of Pentecost, they saw a light, like a little candlelight shining over the head and descended on them. Well, it is there, right above your head, 2 inches, 2.5 inches, waiting to come down into the mechanism, waiting to come through the mechanism. It cannot come down unless there is a connection. That's why he came only to his 12 disciples. And he didn't come to save the sins of the world, you know, and save mankind. He can't. No one man can do it for the whole of the universe. He can only do it for those that are linked to him spiritually and psychically. Those are his renunciate disciples who followed him, and his householder disciples who lived in their married life or in their homes. Those disciples he came to take back. And every age, every century, every moment in time, there is always one or two masters living all the time. And their disciples are always here to bring this knowledge in, to make you aware of it. So there is no new religion. What there is the experienceable religion. How to experience religion for the first time. And how to look at what has been written of religion in a different perspective. See, you're looking at it in a different sense now. For instance, I said this whole body is full of light. It took many centuries after Jesus and many, many masters who've come and made the same statement to one man called Einstein, who actually wrote a formula to validate and state energy is equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared. And then he came along and proved how to measure the speed of light. And this gave us the atomic energy. Now, Brother Krinanda has a song and goes like this. No church can bind him as their own. That means God. No church can bind God as their own. But every atom is his throne. Think of it. There is no church on this earth or in the all the universes that can bind God as their own. I say, we have an exclusive pattern on God. We don't have. There is no exclusive thing. The only thing that can bring home the truth to us, the science of the soul, is the atom itself. Every atom is his throne. But because the very thing we're talking of is cosmic light. Cosmic light in its highest state is unmanifest. When it's manifest, we see it. Let there be light, and that was the first act of creation. You see? Now, before the light, what was there? Darkness? No. It was still light, but just the light wasn't released from its light source. It was in the unmanifest state. It's in the reservoir of light. In Master Yogananda once said, when you meditate and look inside, and were you to see the glory of God, one hair on his head has the brilliance of 10 billion suns. Now, think of that statement. One hair on the head of this creative intelligence can be compared to the brilliance of 10 billion suns. And Oppenheimer just saw one flash of the atomic bomb in the Alamos there and shouted, "It's like the brilliance of 1,000 suns." Right? He quoted the Bhagavad Gita, and the moment he saw it, why did he quote the Bhagavad Gita? That the brilliance of God is like 1,000 suns. But the master said only one hair of this consciousness out of the 1,000 petal lotus light, one single aspect or light from it has the brilliance of the billion suns. We cannot comprehend with a limited mind that is restricted the vastness of this scientific principle called God yet. God is not a man sitting on a throne, like Sri Yukteswar once said. If you expect to find somebody sitting on a throne, "Hello, Earthman, at last you come. Ah, glad to see you. I go and grant you some miracles. Go back now that you've done so many thousands of incarnations and meditation." This is our view of God, you know. But then you realize there's no such thing. So Yogananda, you know, he had this experience of cosmic consciousness, and he saw all the universes in himself. When his teacher touched him on the heart, the breath left him, and he went right out of his body. And he saw his entire universe. And the joy and everything, when he came back, after days of meditation, he came to his teacher one day and says, "Master, when will I find God?" And his teacher told him, "You found him, what do you want? What do you expect, somebody sitting on the throne?" See, we don't realize what we're talking of when we use the word God. In English, the word God has a connotation of personality and as a singular function. When we speak in Sanskrit or in any Oriental language, we're speaking of totality, the allness within things, the allness of all things, because the allness is already total, and the total is one. But this one is not a mathematical figure. It is a state of at-one-ment in which you must enter. You must bring your limited consciousness to a statement of at-one-ment, to a statement of attunement, to see the totalness. And this is done through meditation. Now you will comprehend why meditation is an anagram. Otherwise you would never understand why it's an anagram. M stands for mind or mental. E stands for energy. There are only two forces in the universe, mind, energy. And when energy slows down, it's matter. And when it speeds up, it's mind, or pure consciousness. No. But this mind energy is always directing. That means there's no blind universe. We don't live in a blind universe, move haphazardly through space. There's always order, there's harmony. And it's directing what? I, individual. That means each individual aspect of creation is being internally self-directed. That means God cannot leave no individual aspect out. God is already within each individual aspect, as a self-directing quality. You want to call it conscience? All right. You can use that word. But greater than conscience is soul, soul force. The link between man and God, between the body and God. So it's a self-directing and individual process, I. But this directing process is moving towards something. It's not moving towards destruction. It's moving towards fulfillment. So T is towards. So it's moving individual thought, because we can only think, and we do that all the time, because we are a result of mind and energy. We are the result of thought process, so we are thinking. So we have mental energy directing individual thought activities or thought actions. They call it chitta, mind stuff, the mind waves. Today, encephalograph machine show you your mind waves or brain waves, new name. They even like doing some measurements on yogis and an encephalograph machine going crazy. Cannot figure out these measurements at all, because they don't. No normal brain has these kind of measurements. A yogi's got some fantastic brain waves, especially when they're going to samadhi. The brain waves, the machine is erratic now. What happened? You cannot read them. But this is thought activity we're talking about. The action of these waves. But that's moving towards a certain movement too. It's moving towards intuitive. That means independent of the senses. Your intuition works independent of the senses all the time. It does not depend on any of your senses to function. But it's not developed. It has to be developed, it has to be awakened. It's dormant. That means it needs to be activated. Now, but it's going to surprise you all the time, because you're going to know things about yourself, things about this entire creation and the universe, all independent of your five senses, and you wonder how it is done. You see, there is no magic. This is how it works. It is a realm of consciousness just above this brain that links on, and it's the totality of things. It's independent of the senses. Now we say intuition and T. So we have mental energy, M, E, mental energy, D, directing, I, individual, T, thought, A, activities, T, towards, I, intuitive, O now. This O in meditation is a dualistic function. All meditations are dualistic. Let's see the dualistic functions of meditation. O, observation. We do this as a scientist does. They observe matter to the very minute part of it. And we are going to observe science with the same thing, this whole creation to its minute part of it, independent of our senses. And they are dependent on the x-rays of machines to see it. Two, observation. Thank you. Gonna see the last part of this dualistic function. It's still O. O is dual. So we say O is observation, one function. Second function of oneness. The scientist is observing with his machinery the structure of creation. But the scientist is not becoming one with his creation. There is no scientist who will ever become one with his creation until he meditates. Only the saint, or the realized mystic, or master, is at one with his creation, with this creation. He first observes through meditation, then he becomes one. And at one moment is samadhi. At one moment is cosmic consciousness. Now N, the last letter in meditation, is noumena, not phenomena. Reality, for the first time, man is looking at God all the time. That's why we say the saint is in front of God all the time. He can't go no place. There is no place he can hide himself. Where is he going to hide? In fact, in the superconscious realm, every man is exposed naked as he born. There is no place you can hide. There is no privacy in God awareness. You can only have privacy in your subconscious mind. You can hide behind all type of mental barriers and hang-ups. But you cannot hide in superconsciousness, because everything is torn down and you're exposed for the first time. You'll become like Adam and Eve when they first ate the fruit of the Garden of Eden. They're exposed, you see. This is what happens. You're exposed in the higher realm, therefore your karma now has to work itself out faster. The moment you start meditating, you'd wish you never had start to meditate, because all your karma start coming. It starts to want to wind it up. Why? Because there's nothing to hide behind. Now, if there's nothing to hide behind, then you have achieved the highest power. that every thought you will apply now or direct, having no dualistic motivation behind it, having no subtle undercurrents in it, it's truth. And the moment you speak it with full conviction, the result is a direct materialization, because the atomic structure must obey it. That's why they say, as a man thinketh in his heart now, that is what he is. That's the first time he sees creation coming into manifestation. Now there is a master who lives in India. His name is Satyasai Baba. I don't know if you've heard of him. A friend of mine wanted his photograph. So there was a photographer who took up his camera and got a photograph of Sai Baba. And Sai Baba stopped him. And Sai Baba clapped his hand like that. One picture came out. Then he was about to give the man, then he took it back, because there were so many people around. He afraid he would hurt their feelings by not making one feature on them. And materialized a photograph for all of them and a few extras for their friends to take home. And that's nothing. Sai Baba would sit down and meditate, and right out of his forehead would fall out holy ash called Vibhuti. But these things are not cities or not extrasensory forces. These are the result of God realization. It's only done for those advanced, for people who need to see the, and get some realization. But it's not he is indulging, Raj.
No, indulge is not a word. What I mean is that it is misunderstood. That may not be his purpose or motive, but it is being misunderstood by, you know.
We are seeing in the cusp of Kal Yug and Dwapara Yug a man of Sat Yoga. In other words, we are seeing something on this earth thousands of years ahead of its time. When we get in Sat Yoga, this is a common thing. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Well, no one can assess Sat Sai Baba unless Sai Baba reveals it to that person. That's why he says many people here don't even know who I am or what I am, what I represent. One man says, I know what you are. He says, well, what am I? He starts mumbling. But unless Sai Baba reveals this to that person in his meditation, what is happening? That person has no concept of Sai Baba. Sai Baba is a living example of what a man will be in Sat Yoga. This is his natural heritage in Sat Yoga. Do you follow me now?
I think so.
What we will be doing in Sat Yoga period, Sai Baba is doing now. We are seeing a manifestation of God ahead of its time. We do not have records of people at Sat Yoga. We just have a few little information of what Sat Yoga represents and what has been written of Sat Yoga. And we have information written of when a man gets to Sat Lok, what would be his qualities. But if we don't see anything in a certain time span, we don't know what it is. We're always seeing in Sai Baba's life is a fulfillment of what man will be in Satyuga.